Wednesday. Welcome back to Choreograph Your Life, Season 3, the socially distanced soiree. On behalf of the team, thank you for spending time with us today. We hope you're staying safe and staying healthy. This episode of Choreograph Your Life is brought to you by Audible, the leading provider in spoken word entertainment and audiobooks. You guys know I'm a girl on the go. I can't sit still. I'm never in one place very long, but I still like to consume as much content as I can. Books, podcasts, you name it. Obviously, I'm here for it. And Audible has been a game changer for me. Great news for you. You can start your free trial of Audible and support your favorite podcast by using our link, which is www.audibletrial.com/choreographyourlife. Again, that's www.audibletrial.com/choreographyourlife. Check it out. It is free. If it does not serve you, you can cancel it anytime. We love free, right? So go check it out. Today, I am so excited to introduce to you a person who has been a relatively large part of my life for 20 years now. And man, I feel old saying that. But you know what they say, make new friends and keep the old. Well, I guess we have followed direction well because we just can't seem to get rid of each other. Clayton Smith is an award-winning author, an entrepreneur, and an associate professor of instruction at Columbia College Chicago, where he teaches classes in marketing, digital media, and arts management. He has written and published over a dozen novels, short story collections, and plays, one that I actually happened to be in at the St. Louis Fringe Festival. More on that later. He is the co-creator of the End of Things podcast and the co-founder of the Chicago-focused humor brand CTA Fails. He is currently building a family-owned coffee roasting company called Reconstruction Coffee Roasters while quarantining in St. Louis with his beautiful wife and newborn daughter. So, as I'm sure you can imagine, he is very tired. Well, good news. He was wide awake for our interview and is going to share a wealth of knowledge and even more laughs with us today. I'm so excited to have him here on the podcast. I think you guys are really, really going to enjoy him. We had so much fun doing this interview. This is several months ago that we got to sit down and do this. So some of it might feel a little bit like, where are they living in this world? But, you know, both of us have kind of crazy schedules, so we needed to get it in while we could. And I'm so excited to share this with you today. So, ladies and gentlemen, my friend and soon to be yours, Clayton Smith. Woo! All right, everybody, here he is, the very tired man, Clayton Smith.
I am exhausted.
Oh my gosh, I'm so happy that you were able to wake up from hopefully a nap, but probably not because you have 1,700 jobs to be here with us today.
You noticed that I asked you to schedule this interview in the afternoon so that there was a solid chance that I would be awake.
I did notice that. And, yeah. You know, I'm here for that as well. Mornings are hard, man.
Mornings are rough. Mornings are rougher now, I think, than they have been in a long time for lots of reasons.
I can't even imagine what a morning is like whenever there is a child involved.
There is a four-month-old child involved, and to be totally honest, the person who really bears the brunt of that is Erin, is my wife Erin, who
what a saint
wakes up, you know, between 1 and 78 times a night to feed this baby. But you know, that's also hard on me because like when she gets out of bed, it like shifts the mattress a little, and
of
then like
course,
I wake up for like 7 seconds, and that just like, I don't know, I'm in a sleep rhythm, and she really ruins it.
Man,
for me.
How so rude of her. So inconsiderate.
Yeah, it's hard, but
Well, you're very brave. Thank you for being here today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, I'm so happy to have you.
It's about time. I thought this was never going to happen.
Well, you know, I was just waiting until the podcast was a little bit more seasoned, until I kind of had a flow and a rhythm going on. I didn't want to just bring you into this willy-nilly, you know?
You wanted to bring the A-level guests first to really attract the new followers. And totally. now you can bring in the D-level.
Now that people are trapped. They're trapped in the whole cycle we thought we'd bring you in. No, I'm so excited to have you here. So can you, even though everyone just heard, obviously, your
amazing bio, which actually is very, very impressive. Tell us a little bit about the Clayton Smith.
I will. Every time I put together a bio, it's always surprising to see it all down in one place. It starts to make sense why I'm just so tired all the time. So my real person job, my full-time job is I'm a college professor, an associate professor of instruction at Columbia College Chicago in the Business and Entrepreneurship Department, where I teach classes on marketing and digital media and in live performance management. Awesome. So that's the most, the thing takes up most of my time. And since Columbia College Chicago, as the name suggests, exists in Chicago, and I live in St. Louis, so I commute there, or I did commute there in the pre-coronavirus times. Right. I was commuting once a week by train. So I would go up, once a week and stay for a couple days in Chicago and teach all my classes and then come back home. So that's kind of the bulk of life.
Yeah. Well, and you guys used to live in Chicago though, so it wasn't just a surprise.
Yeah, we decided to move back home, to St. Louis. And I tried to quit the job of teaching and they said, no, thank you. And I said, well, I'm moving 300 miles away. And they said, we'll make it work.
That's awesome. So, that's gonna make you feel pretty good.
It did make me feel pretty good. Or like they were really just especially desperate. But either way, the timing has worked out great. And so we tried it for a year and it's actually been going pretty well.
Awesome. That's wonderful. Yeah, they were like, this Columbia College will not exist without Clayton Smith. So
I think that was what they all decided. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that's how that went. So you're commuting there. You go up on, you said, a Monday and come back on a Wednesday?
I go up on Monday or Tuesday and come back Wednesday or Thursday.
Gotcha. Wonderful. Yeah. And you take the train.
And I spend 5 hours on a train trying to catch up from the sleep that I haven't been getting.
I was just going to ask you, do you sleep on the train or do you use that as an opportunity to do your lesson plans or how does that go for you?
I should be using it for lesson plans. Like when the internet is working on the Amtrak, it doesn't have a great track record of success. When it does work, then I can get my grading done. I have two of my classes are online classes.
Oh, okay.
So I can do a lot of work on the Amtrak, which is really nice. When the internet is not working, which is quite often, then I like to take little naps.
Nice.
I like to listen to podcasts.
Great. I
like to listen to Choreograph Your Life. I like to listen to it twice, I think, really.
Oh, wow.
Each episode. Yeah, I listen to it and then I start it over again.
You're committed. I really want to know.
I want to really ring out all the genius.
I feel that. Are you hitting up that cart, that beverage cart all the time? Because I sure am when I'm on an Amtrak.
You know what I've decided to do? Because the beverage cart is so expensive. So now the trick is you got to come prepared and you bring your own beverages. And they don't
cooler? Like you bring your own cooler, BYOB?
Well, you see, you have a big enough backpack. there are some fun tricks you could do. So, I've been getting really, really sneaky. They don't like it when you bring your own adult beverages onto the Amtrak. So you got to be really careful.
No, they don't. I've done that before and it was kind of a little bit frowned upon / they couldn't tell me that I had to take it off, but they also it was like a snide little under the breath kind of comment in that moment.
Yeah, that sounds right.
You do what you gotta do.
But it's been kind of fun because since I take the same trains almost every week, I get to it's almost always the same crew.
Oh, nice.
And so now I get to know them all and we kind of do the little head nod. There's one really nice guy who gives me a fist bump every time I get on the train. That's really nice.
Oh, that's awesome. You have your own little community on the Amtrak.
Yeah. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought is right. So I guess my question then right now, because I don't know the answer to this, is Amtrak still up and running?
I think they are. I just got an email from them actually. They're running. They're limiting to 50% capacity and everyone has to wear a mask now.
Gotcha.
I think they're still going.
For those of you listening today, this interview was obviously pre-recorded, and it is, what is the day today? May 14th? May 13th? Oh,
God, what is time? I don't know.
I've lost track of all days. The only day, I know when it's Wednesday, because that's whenever the podcasts come out, but other than that, my concept of time is like all over the place. And
it's insane.
Unavailable. So you live in St. Louis, you teach in Chicago, you have a beautiful wife named Erin, and we just started to experience fatherhood. So tell us about that.
It is something. It's pretty amazing. It's so interesting because, you know, obviously I had no idea what to expect. Maple is our first child, and I didn't really know what to expect, but it's so interesting because we have been staying at home with her because she's not like particularly mobile, you know. Sometimes she's not walking, she's not crawling, she's not driving. It's like she's pretty boring.
Does she have a job?
No. So we're like covering all her bills right now. It's man, yeah,
total freeloader. She's like a dog.
I know. 18 yet. She it's been, so we were staying home with her, you know, all the time, basically, anyway. And then so when, you know, social isolation and quarantine started hitting, life didn't change really all that much from the last few months. So that was a nice transition. And really, it's kind of like, it's obviously there are so many terrible things wrapped up in the pandemic. But one of the kind of silver linings for us is now we get to spend so much time with her. And she's growing so fast. Like she's already, Erin and I are both pretty tall.
Yeah.
And Maple is like, she is in the 95th percentile for height, or I guess they call it length at this age.
Right, yeah.
She's more horizontal than vertical. And so she's only 4 months old, but she's wearing like 6 to 9 month clothes it's the only stuff that's long enough. Like they're super baggy on her.
Because she's a thin little girl.
Yeah, yeah.
But so are you guys. I mean, she comes by it honestly.
She seems to fit in the family okay.
Yeah. And you know the other thing, so right before we started recording this, listeners out there, I was able to Zoom with Maple, and she's so expressive, like smiling, and I mean she seemed like she knew what was going on, and I don't know if you guys Zoom with her a lot or what's going on there, but she was very engaged in that moment.
As you might imagine, she gets a lot of requests during Zooms to make appearances. So she's been the star of quite a few conferences. But she is, yeah. It's so amazing. Like when she smiles, she gets this big. It's like a Muppet. She looks like a Muppet. Like just giant, full open mouth, like eyes closed, smile. She's got this look where she will just like raise one eyebrow, you know, like the other one is like down. It's amazing.
Well, she has pretty expressive parents too. Again, she comes by all of this very honestly.
That's very true.
I love it. So, okay, you're in St. Louis, you're working at Columbia College, but you have had throughout the course of this long extended time that I've known you, because folks, I have known Clayton since we were what, 14 or 15?
14, I think, sounds right.
That's wild. That's over half of our lives that we've known each other.
Isn't that stupid? That is.
The fact that neither one of us has killed each other yet is pretty remarkable, really.
Pretty amazing.
Really. I love it. I think it's great. In this time that I've known you, you have done so many different projects, events, things. Like you're always creating. You're just like this crazy entrepreneur that has so many, you know, just things out in the universe. Can you tell us about, you know, what some of those things have been and how you got there and just all of it? We just want to know all of it.
Just know everything. Yes. I can speak to that. I can speak to everything.
Perfect.
I think I get bored easily is what I've decided. Sure. And so I like to always be working on new things. And I guess my first really, what I would consider my first really big creative project was my first novel. So now I've written and published, independently published, I don't know, over like a dozen novels and short story collections at this point. And the first one was in 2014 was when Apocalypticon, my first novel, came out. And I had always wanted to be a writer. Like that was what, like when I was little, I thought that a writer was a thing you could be and make a living.
Is that what you majored in? I can't remember what you majored in.
No, my major was in journalism. So it was
Okay. So
writing adjacent.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And so I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be a fiction writer. And it turns out it's really hard to do that as a career. But
sure.
I wrote my first novel, and it took 3.5 years to write that first novel, right? And it was so frustrating. And I thought, God, this is terrible. If it takes me 3.5 years to write any book, like, I'm gonna just go insane, because I was so frustrated that I couldn't focus more and, like, write more efficiently. Mm-hmm. And what I think I was doing wrong at the time, which I have now made up for in spades, is I didn't have any other creative projects to fill the gaps in that writing time when I couldn't focus on writing or I wasn't interested in writing. It was either I was working on this novel or I wasn't doing anything creative. And so I had, like, this creative energy, and it was all kind of pent up, but I couldn't focus it on this project. I couldn't force it when it wasn't working for me. And so it was a really frustrating process. And so what I started doing after I published that book was, when I started on the next book, I worked on it until I couldn't work on it anymore. I lost focus, or it was just becoming kind of boring for me, or just wasn't feeling inspired or whatever. And then I started writing something else totally different. And so I started working on, like, 4 different books at the same time. And it kind of gave me this other area to kind of channel my ideas and my creativity. And it took a while to finish all the books, but when I finished them all pretty close to the same time. So it was suddenly like, boom, 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 boom. I have 4 more books ready to go, because I've been working on them all separately. And so I was like, oh, this is how this works. This is how we're going to do this. So now I try to have a lot of projects available at all times that I can kind of focus on. So we've got,
that's really interesting, because from what you're saying, like, you're able to almost pull inspiration for one project from another and back and forth and back and forth. Am I correct in thinking that that's sort of what's happening?
I think so, in the sense of, like, re-energizing myself.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
I don't know how it is for other writers, but, you know, sometimes I'm feeling it and sometimes I'm not. And, kind of stepping away from the project for a little while, working on something else. And it's, you know, a different type of creativity, because it's a different type of story. Like, if I'm working on, you know, post-apocalyptic story, then I switch to write a horror story, and I switch to write, you know, a children's book. They're all different types of, they're kind of flexing different types of creative muscles.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, you're still getting the juices flowing, but then when you come back to the other projects, you're like, oh yeah, I feel good. I now have more energy to write this particular type of thing.
What's your favorite thing to write?
All of it. I think anything that's, like, dark comedy is really fun for me. Yeah.
Sure. So you've written novels, you've written children's books, you've written plays, which we'll come back to in a minute. some short story. What else?
I also have done, or am doing, several different podcasts. I think so. Right now, I'll give you an idea of what my kind of creative schedule is.
Yeah, please.
Right now, so I'm working on the third book in my Apocalypticon series right now. So that's a novel.
Will that be the final book, or is that
no,
series going to continue?
It turns out I was. That's a fun story. So after I wrote the first book, it did really well, and this audio company, this company that buys audio rights for books and, you know, then creates audiobooks, they approached me and they bought the rights for that. And that was really great. They gave a little advance, and that was fun. And then I wrote the sequel to that book, and I kind of reached out to them and said, hey, any chance to be interested in the audio rights for the sequel? And I thought at the beginning I was just going to write one book. It wasn't going to be a series. And then I was like, well, this could be a 2-book thing. It could be a sequel. And then they bought the rights to that one, and they said, we'll also take the rights to any other books in this series that you're planning on writing. And this was at a time when I was getting ready to, like, having more money.
Sure.
I said, oh, well, that's really interesting, because I am going to write a total of 5 books in this series.
Yes.
And they said, that's really great. We'll take it all.
And you said, cool.
And I said, sold. Now I got to figure out what these other books are going to be about.
Sure.
So there's going to be 5, I think, total.
Okay.
Unless they offer me more money, then I'll then maybe it'll be 30. I don't know.
Yeah. Who can say? Who can say, Kelly? Who can say?
That's so awesome. Working on that now. I started writing an essay a couple weeks ago because I was really inspired. I don't write nonfiction ever. I've never really written an essay, but I was really inspired. I read this great short essay that Aaron had sent me, and it's I don't remember the author's name, so I apologize, but it's called "Fuck the Bread, the Bread is Over."
Okay.
And it's from the Paris Review, and it's such a wonderfully written essay that really kind of struck home with me, and it made me want to write an essay. So I'm working on that. So I got the novel, I got the essay. I am working with my frequent collaborator, Stephen Luna, who's one of my friends who is just obscenely talented.
The coolest guys I've ever met.
He's the nicest person anyone has ever met in the world.
Truly the nicest guy.
Yeah. And just, I mean, insanely talented. He's an incredible writer. He's an illustrator. His art is amazing. He's very talented and I hate it.
Isn't it so interesting? We have those friends that we're like, man, they have everything going for them. And I'm so glad they're my friend, but like kind of, I hate them a little bit.
Yeah. So, but what I decided to do a long time ago was just like start tricking him into working on things with me so I could just kind of like, you know, glom on to whatever good things he's doing.
There you go.
So we collaborate a lot. And right now we're working on a bunch of things. We have a storytelling podcast called The End of Things, where it's kind of fun. He and I are figuring out the story as we go along. So
you know,
we
don't know
where the story's going. Yeah, it's been really kind of a fun exercise.
Yeah.
So we're doing that. We are building.
What's the name of that again? I need to put this down in my subscriptions.
It is The End of Things.
The End of Things.
The End of Things.
Okay, perfect.
So we're working on that. We are working on a new podcast that takes place. And so I wrote a novel called Anomaly Flats.
Right.
And I kind of built this world of Anomaly Flats. It's kind of like the Twilight Zone meets Missouri.
Okay.
And I like to place a lot of different projects inside that world because it's a really fun place for my for my mind to be. So we're working now on a new podcast. I think it's going to be called, I don't know what it's going to be called, but it's going to be really good. And it's going to take
some. It's going to be great.
It's going to be really super great. And it's going to take place in the Anomaly Flat. So it's going to be another fiction podcast. Working on that together.
Okay.
We are working on a web comic, an Instagram comic strip.
Okay.
Called Writer's Block, which is just about two writers. It's very, it's rather autobiographical.
Sure.
And it's, you know, about two writers just trying to, you know, navigate the insane and challenging and frustrating world of being a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Writer's Block comic strip, I think, on Instagram. It's the longest Instagram handle known to man.
Writer's Block comic strip. Got it.
Writer's Block comic strip, I believe. I should know for sure.
We'll all check it out.
Yeah.
We're Instagram people around here.
So I'm doing those things. And then with another one of my colleagues, Ryan Smith, who's another frequent collaborator, we have a podcast called Adult Harder.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah. Have you been on that?
I've not been on that, but I'm just waiting patiently for an invitation.
I think we went away from interviews for a while. And then, so we were doing that podcast for a couple of years and we stopped in 2018 because I moved to Missouri. But we decided to bring it back. So now we're doing a special COVID season of Adult Harder.
That's awesome.
And maybe we'll have you in for one of those episodes. That would be very fun.
I would be honored. How often do you guys release episodes?
Well, we've decided, so this is part of the only reason that all these projects work. So for all these things, we've all decided like we're only doing these if we're not locked into a regular schedule. And I know that's not a very good way to do podcasts because consistency is really important.
Sure.
But you know, if we were doing one episode of Adult Harder and one episode of The End of Things and one episode of this new Anomaly Flats and one episode of CTA Fails, which is another podcast Ryan and I do together, we would all go insane. So we're doing them as often as we can get around to them.
Which, that makes total sense. I know what you mean. It's hard because consistency is important, but like for those of you listening, please understand, and this is not a complaint because I like doing it and I know you like doing it too, but it is a lot of work just to, you know, obviously if you're doing an interview type podcast, schedule guests and get questions to them and schedule time and so on and so forth. So yeah, I totally understand. Like, and especially whenever you have so many projects going at one time between your podcast and your writing and, you know, you have your job with Columbia and just everything going on, it would be really hard to commit to like a weekly or a daily or something like to that effect.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot. So we just kind of, we put out new episodes whenever we can, which we're, I think we're trying to do every 2 weeks for all of them, which we're sometimes hitting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, but I think you guys are also seemingly pretty clear about that with your audience. So, you know, I think with anything, if people know what to expect in advance, it's not, it doesn't come as such a shock and like, people feel let down or anything.
We've been very careful to set very low expectations on all the things that we do, just in case.
How long have you guys been podcasting?
Since 2016, I think.
Nice.
So, but again, we stopped. We took like, you know, there's been nothing happening for a while there, but
right. Well, you were really helpful for me in like in learning the platform and figuring out how to kind of go about the setup and everything like that. So I'm very thankful to you.
Welcome. Yeah, and that
lunch we had it at where were we? We were at Dewey's.
Billy G's.
Billy G's. Yes.
Billy
G's. What an informative day.
I like it because we spent so much time just like learning all the stuff on our own. It's nice to actually use it
to
help other people.
Oh, I'm sure. Yes, I totally understand that. So beyond all of these creative projects that you have going on right now and your teaching schedule at Columbia, what else is going on with your life right now, Clayton?
One other small thing that we're doing right now is my wife and my sister and I are starting a coffee roasting company.
Wow, that's definitely in line with everything else you have going on.
Yeah, it definitely fits.
It kind of does.
You think so?
I do, because I think, why don't you talk? I'll share my thoughts later. You go on about your coffee business.
Well, I think one of the things that I'm really excited about, actually, so, and I've been thinking about this a lot, because it's kind of a departure from, you know, not necessarily being creative, but from, you know, writing books and doing podcasts is so, there's not like a material thing you're creating. I mean, obviously a book eventually becomes a material thing, but it's really about the story and the writing. I exist in my own head a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think what I'm really liking about roasting coffee is it's an actual like tangible hands-on product. And sure. I can like kind of, you know, shut my brain off and make something that is valuable and useful, not, you know, unlike art, which is nonsense and totally pointless and no one likes it.
So oh, come on.
The idea of like working with my hands has been really fun.
Yeah.
We're building a coffee roastery out in Villa Ridge, Missouri, the very small town where I grew up. And it's, you know, it's a project. We are in the middle of building a building, and hopefully it's going to be done. I don't know. I don't know when. Depends on how everything keeps going with, you know, pandemic and stuff. But they're still working on it. So I'm thinking, like, it's possible it might be open by late June even.
Amazing.
Might be a little hopeful, but definitely by the end of summer for sure.
Awesome. Well, I think, like, for you, and I know you're saying it's something tangible, it's something a little different than what, you know, you kind of projects that you normally work in. But I also feel like everything that you do is about storytelling, and it's about almost you're connecting with your audience through podcasts or through your book or whatever the case may be. And you're creating kind of, you're creating memories for them, you're creating pictures for them. And I think, like, inadvertently with your coffee roastery, you're going to be doing the same thing. You're creating, you know, space for people, and you're creating a place where people can come together and create their own stories. And I just, I think I thought about that a lot, because at first, whenever you told me that this is what we're doing, yes, on paper, it is completely different than everything that you do, but then also it ties in really nicely. I personally feel for that reason, because, you know, you are such a story driven person and an experience driven, driving person. And I think it's going to be so great.
Thank you. I think so too. Actually, I think you're onto something there, kid. I think that's true. I think we've had a lot of fun with the branding. We mm-hmm. took it really seriously. And part of the reason that we decided to open this coffee roastery, so my parents are also involved. They're not actually part of the coffee roastery, but they are the owners of the building.
Okay.
So they're basically our landlords, but they're also super involved with the coffee roasting business too. And we started this because Aaron and I were living in Chicago, and we knew we wanted to leave Chicago, but we just didn't know where we wanted to go.
Right.
We wanted to come back here or move somewhere else or out by her family in California. And we were kind of talking about our future. And as part of that conversation, you know, we thought, you know, we want to have a family. And if we have a baby, like, we want to be able to raise a kid, like, in a some sort of like business that we've created that could be like a family business where, mm-hmm. you know, she can come home after school. If we're not home, she can just come to the place and like be with us. And we started thinking about different versions of that. And the one that we both really liked a lot is some sort of like coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, you know, we're talking about this idea, like, that'd be kind of a fun thing to do, a coffee roastery or a coffee shop. And we were thinking about all this stuff, and we ended up going that fall, like in 2018, to my cousin's wedding in Galena, Illinois. And my whole family was there, and uh-huh. we spent a day walking around Galena, which is a really cute little small town, like a lot of like antiques and shops and things. And we were wandering around, and my dad got to talking to this guy who was selling coffee inside his wife's shop, and he roasted his own coffee in the attic. So we went up and we saw his setup, and he was really excited about it and talking about how great it is to roast coffee and things. And dad was like, man, I would love to roast coffee. I would love to be a coffee roaster. I'd love to try that. Mm-hmm. And we said, well, you know, Aaron and I have been talking about maybe getting into some sort of coffee business and starting our own place in the next couple of years. And my sister Emily, who I think you probably know, spent like 7 or 9 years living in Seattle.
Yes.
And she, when she was there, and I had totally forgotten this, when she was there, she and her then husband were working on a business. Like, they had put together a whole business plan to open a coffee roastery. And I had totally forgotten about this. And she was there. She's like, oh, hello. I would love to open a coffee roastery. I like was going like, to do that.
Hi, most obvious choice right over here.
Yeah. And she like worked at all these coffee shops. She's like a really good barista. And I totally forgotten about all of it. And so she was like, hello. And then we like, maybe we could do this. So we decided to. So we moved home, and we're doing it.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Good for you. You know what? And another just example of, if you want to do something in your life, you just have to literally choreograph it, like figure out what the steps are going to be and then get an end goal, you know, like, and then boom, there it is, your product. And of course you'll keep tweaking it and working it and so on and so forth. But literally anything is possible, because when I knew you at 14, 15 years old, if you would have said to me, I'm going to have a coffee roastery, I would have been like, oh, okay. I don't think that probably will happen, but all right, nerd.
Go over with your nerd friends. I'm in my cool group. Don't talk to me anymore.
Oh, please. I was sat at that same lunch table with all of you boys, and we watched all sorts of nerdy things happen together.
You really slummed it.
I loved that table.
It was a
good
table.
What I wouldn't do to go back to that lunch table right now in this moment. So with all of these projects going on, how do you go about choreographing your day?
I've been thinking about that a lot lately, actually, because I think, you know, like everyone else, the type of schedule that I follow has been totally upended by the pandemic. And so I've been thinking about that a lot. And I think, I think that I choreograph my day by kind of just, to back up a little bit. First of all, my students kind of determine a lot of my schedule, because since we're doing all classes virtually now, we're in our final week as we're recording this of school for the semester.
Okay.
which is nice. I'll have more free time soon. But I've made it very clear to them that, you know, anytime you or your group or whatever just want to like talk to me, ask me questions about any of the work we're doing or whatever, let me know. We'll set up a Zoom and we'll do it. And they've been taking advantage of that. So a lot of times my day is
probably both good and bad, because
it's got its ups and downs.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. As things do. But that's awesome that you're making yourself so available, because students right now who are trying to stay passionate and stay focused and stay, you know, like wrapped into what they're doing, to have somebody like you that they can, you know, that they know that they can go to with questions and everything, that's really cool that you're doing that.
Yeah, and I'm glad they're taking advantage of it too. Yeah. So, and it's really nice to see them. Don't tell anybody this, but I really miss my students. It's weird.
I feel that in my soul so hard right now. Yeah. So hard right now. Teaching via the web is great, and like I'm glad that we have the platform and opportunity and avenue to do so, but it is not the same.
Exactly. So my schedule is kind of, that's where my schedule starts. Like if I have a student meeting at 10 o'clock, then I know that I have to be out of bed in time for a 10 o'clock meeting, which you wouldn't think would be too hard, but it's sometimes a challenge. So it starts there, but I think otherwise I think I'm structuring my days kind of the same way I structure all my projects in general, which is I do what appeals to me next. You know, like I have the things that I have to do, like I have to take care of Maple. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Have to meet with students. That's, you know, number one and a half. Mm-hmm. And everything else though is like, I don't know what I want to do. Am I feeling like I want to work on this book? Am I going to work on, you know, part of the Reconstruction coffee roaster business? Are we going to, you know, whatever it feels interesting and compelling to work on is what I work on next.
Sure.
And I'm thinking a lot about that because I think I'm being pretty productive. And I keep seeing all these people who keep saying like, if you want to be productive and you don't want to, you know, you don't want to just like waste your time, you should wake up just as early as you always do, and you should shower and should put on real clothes and then make you feel like you have a routine and really get moving. And I think there's a lot of validity to that for some people, but I've been thinking about it a lot, and I don't know if that's necessarily always true. I don't think I agree with that. I think that is trying to put our productivity into a schedule that we've just kind of gotten used to using for productivity. Like no one is born thinking, God, I'm going to get so much done today between the hours of 9 o'clock and 5 o'clock.
Right, right.
Like, we just get used to working within that structure. And I think right now we're not, like, we couldn't be further away from that structure, right? Like,
true.
I think that trying to repeat that structure now, it's good because if that's your routine, that's your habit, and that works for you, that's great. But I don't think you should feel bad if you're taking advantage of this new lack of structure in a way that works for you. I think it's totally okay to wake up when you wake up and to keep sweatpants on all day.
Thank
God. And maybe I'm just projecting here because this is what I'm doing, but.
No, you are not alone.
But this is a different time, you know, and I think we should recognize that it's a different time. I think we should recognize that we're not going to the office. We're not going to the classroom. We're not doing these things. And it's not the same. And maybe when we kind of let ourselves, when we make it okay for ourselves to figure out our pandemic schedule, maybe we'll learn that we work in completely different ways than we thought we did.
Yeah.
Maybe we just have been thinking we work certain ways because that's how we've had to work. But
right.
So I think it's really important to, in terms of, you know, choreographing your day, I think it's important to just be okay with letting your day choreograph itself sometimes.
Yes. Because even in actual like dance choreography, there are so many times that, you know, I will have a thought or a vision and I want something to go a certain way. And then by accident, you know, the dancers do something different, and then it the whole thing starts to choreograph itself differently. And that's not always the worst thing that can ever happen.
Absolutely.
You know, because you see it, you get to see things in a different way, and you can pull inspiration from different places, and you get re-energized, like you are saying, with all of the projects that you have going on. But, you know, throughout the day, if things are kind of, I don't want to say ping-ponging, because that's not really it, but if things are kind of taking a different shape I agree with you that that's okay. And people shouldn't get all stressed out about that either. You know, if you're not holding to a, this is what I'm doing from 9 to 10, this is what I'm doing from 10 to 11. Obviously, yes, there are people that have to have that structure.
Sure.
But for people like yourself or other entrepreneur types that have a lot of different things going on, I think that you can get stifled by that. And so, yeah, I think that's a very important point that you make, is to just kind of let it maybe choreograph itself a little bit.
Yeah, I think another good analogy is like, if you write a play about two people who are trapped in a cave, and then someone that you know takes one of the roles in that play, and you're watching her act, and you think to yourself, that is not how these lines are supposed to be delivered. But then you think, well, maybe that's okay though. You know, like maybe
this feels very, very personal.
You just got to be okay with adaptation and change and sometimes letting go and saying it's okay if this performance is terrible, because Kelly is going to do what Kelly does.
I'm going to just stop you right there. And I'm going to address this really quickly. So those of you listening, so you know, Clayton wrote a play and he said, hey, Kelly, will you be in this play that we're
doing?
I don't
think that's entirely the way it
I did
worked.
Not like ask to be in it.
Well, that's true. The director, who is a mutual friend of both of us and a former teacher, I asked him if he would direct it. And he said, yeah, but only if you and Kelly are in it.
So here we are. So we did it.
We did it. We really did something.
Hey, I thought it was pretty good.
It was really fun.
It was a lot of fun. And you know what was so crazy about that whole experience is, number one, I had a great time, and it was so fun to get to spend time with you and get to spend time with B and just everything that surrounded that. But the part that was like very eye-opening for me is my inability to remember lines anymore.
That was also very eye-opening for me.
Which, you know, and I'm sure that people said to you, as they say to me, whenever it comes to choreography, a lot of times it's like, well, you wrote it or you choreographed it. It's like, you think I remember it? No. Like,
I think you said that to me several times.
I'm sure I probably did. But in fairness, I also then, for some reason, was like, I was choreographing Six Flags St. Louis Fright Fest, and somebody wasn't going to be at opening night. And so stupid me, I was like, I'll do it. Dumb. And so people were like, why can't you remember this? Like, you choreographed it. And I'm like, that doesn't mean anything. Like, just because it came from my brain, does it mean that it's stuck there?
And I would say, I don't know if you have this when you're choreographing, but a lot of times when I'm writing, especially a script, I will write the most like outlandish things, like the craziest, like the weirdest stage directions and really challenging language, because my thought is, well, I don't have to do this.
yes. And there was the pacing of that show that you and I did, like, mm-hmm. had to be so on point, and we had to, yes.
If I had known that I was going to be in the play, I would have written it very differently.
You know, my return to the stage probably could have been a little different as well. Like, in terms of that, it was a pretty big undertaking. How long was that show? 30 minutes?
No, 60 minutes, right? 60.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't.
I think it was. I did write a 30-minute version for Tim to use for his students, but then the version we did was 60 minutes.
All right. There we are. We did it.
We did it. And you were great. It was really fun.
So are you. It was a lot of fun. I mean, we joked about, actually, it wasn't really a joke, but it is, I guess, at this point, submitting it to the New York Fringe Festival, because we wanted to just continue it, take our show on the road. But, you know, I don't know that that's going to be a thing for a while, but should it be, you know,
in the year 2027, I'm going to start submitting it to places, and we're going to do it again.
I'm sure I remember it. I actually still have the script. It's sitting next to me in this room that I'm in. So I could pull it back out.
Nice. Don't lose it.
I'm going to stay fresh.
We're going to use it again.
Yes. So how are you staying motivated though? Like, how are you keeping yourself motivated? How are you keeping your students motivated? How are you keeping Aaron, Maple, all the people? How are you staying motivated in this time?
I don't know if I'm motivating Aaron. That might be a question for Aaron. She is mostly, I think, tolerating me. Because she's very nice.
She is very nice.
She's just very nice.
Well, Aaron is also a very motivated human being as well.
Absolutely.
You want to give the listeners a little bit of backstory about your beautiful wife?
Yeah, Erin is an extremely talented and creative and motivated person. She is also a dancer and choreographer. She is an actress. She, you know, was in 42nd Street on Broadway. She was in the first National Revival tour of The Producers.
She's fine.
She's done casting in New York for a really long time, and she's got a lot going on. And,
she's great.
She's wonderful.
I'm like still shook that you landed that whole situation.
It's weird. It's I think so far this is working, and I think if I continue to just not ever bring up to her how strange it is that she's part of this, then
hopefully she doesn't listen to this podcast.
Okay.
No, she is also very lucky as well.
Oh, thanks.
I get to say that as like basically a sister of yours. She is also very lucky.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so she tolerates me, which has been very nice. Mm-hmm. Maple, it's easy to stay motivated, I think, around Maple, because if you're not doing what Maple needs, Maple will let you know that you're not doing what she needs by screaming very loudly.
Love that.
So that's very motivational for me. Mm-hmm. In terms of my students, I am happy to report that while I know a lot of my colleagues, a lot of teachers all over the country have had students just kind of disappear and drop off when they went virtual, I don't think I've had any students just stop responding or stop working in the class. And I'm
good. That's great.
I'm very lucky. I have really fantastic students. I mean, always at Columbia, but especially this semester, I think. But I also think that keeping them motivated, for me, I think really comes down to empathy. Like a lot of them are seniors. A lot of them aren't going to be able to walk. They're graduating and they're not going to have a graduation ceremony. And that really sucks for them. You know, that makes them like really sad. And it makes me really sad that they can't do that. And meanwhile, you know, they're being asked to work on all these major projects because it's upper class. I have a lot of seniors and I have a lot of grad students too. And they're all working on major projects for these courses and they still have to get them done for the class. And so we're all trying to figure out, you know, new virtual, like for one of my graduate undergraduate classes, they do a devise theater festival. They put together a full theater festival every year. And now they're putting together a virtual theater festival. Like they've taken the whole plan and just totally upended it with like 6 weeks. They switched all their plans and now it's running this week. And it's been extraordinary. They've done such an amazing job. And I think just kind of that empathy and that sense of we're all in this together, you know, we've got to get this done. I'm going to help you and you got to help me. And, you know, whatever it takes, I will be here as much as you. So for that festival class, I mean, I meet with those students 3 to 4 times a week, and it's amazing to me that they are willing to do that. And I think it's probably helpful that I'm willing to do that. Like, I'm not telling them, like, you guys go meet and report back. I'm telling them, I'll be there. I'll set up the Zoom meeting. I'll host it. Like, I will be there with you. We'll all work on this together. And I think that's been hopefully motivational for them.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Wow. I have so many more questions about this theater festival, but we can talk about that offline because it will be past at this point.
It will be, but you can still go on and see. I think we're going to just leave the works up there. After this week, we're going to like re-release everything.
So tell us then a little bit about it. Like, how are you pulling that off?
So the whole festival, the class is really cool. So I work in the business and entrepreneurship department. So the graduate students in my class are Masters of Arts Management students. For this class, they pair with MFA students from the theater department who are part of a European devised performance program. And so those MFA students all create devised theater pieces. And then together, they and my students produce this festival.
Wow.
And it's a huge undertaking and it's really fun and really frustrating and you know, all those good things.
Yeah.
This year, so they're doing it all online, and basically what it's looking like is 4 of the 5 performances have been turned into basically videos.
Okay.
And they're releasing a video every night at 8 o'clock this week, and it's running for 24 hours. So you can go to the website, thirdmaskfestival.com, and you can watch the pieces. And then, like I said, next week, we're going to just open them all up again.
Okay. Thirdmaskfestival.com.
Yeah. And then the Friday night piece, which as we're recording this is tomorrow, I'm really excited for it because it's the one that's going to be a live. It's going to be a multi-camera live Zoom performance.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty impressive.
That's great.
So we've got that. And then they've...
So is it monologues? Is it...
No, it's...
Vocal performances? Is it everything?
It's everything. And the you know, devised theater is something I'm still kind of learning about every semester because it's not something I'm terribly familiar with. But this form of devised theater is very movement-based. So it's there, you know, throughout the semester, they're figuring out how to tell the story they want to tell, utilizing their own movement, like movement through a space. And so it's more movement based than monologue based. And sometimes there are ensembles, sometimes it's just them, but it's very personal and emotional work that they are kind of, it's not too dissimilar from interpretive dance, I would think.
Okay. Okay.
But just kind of more staged and, you know, theater like.
Gotcha.
But it's been really great. So they also put together three different panels. So on Monday at noon, they had a live Zoom panel on the devising process. Wednesday, they had a live panel on careers and arts festivals. And then tomorrow, they're going to have a live panel on diversity and inclusion in the performing arts.
Wow. And
they've set all this up and they've got great moderators. They've got, you know, 4 to 5 panelists, and they've organized everything, and it all lives on the website. And it's been really pretty amazing to see it all come together.
That's so cool. Do you just feel like a proud papa?
I am. I really do. Like I tell them all the time. I think they're sick of hearing it now because I don't know. I am very proud of them.
They're like, yeah, we get it. Moving on. No, that's so cool. I'm so like proud of you that you guys were able to make all of that happen. That's really great. So do you think that, you know, that being said, do you feel that there are actually areas of your professional life that have perhaps improved due to this global pandemic that we are experiencing?
I don't know if I would say improved. I would say it's been really kind of interesting to see how areas of my professional life can translate into into this new world. That's been really great to see that happening. Mm-hmm. Part of that is because we can keep teaching virtually. I feel relatively confident that there's a good chance I'll be able to keep my job, which, you know, there are so many people who are not that fortunate.
Sure. Yep.
So that's been really good. The only thing I think is actually improving is, it's funny. I wonder if you're finding this too. Like I'm Zoom connecting with a lot more people now socially than ever before.
Yes. And absolutely.
That has led to a lot of like new collaboration and new creative, and that's been really kind of interesting. So I think I don't think the Adult Harder podcast would have come back, you know, if we weren't in quarantine. I don't think Luna and I would have started the End of Things podcast if we weren't looking for creative outlets, you know, in this weird and frustrating time.
Yeah. So, I think that, you know, with everybody having to kind of reshift, is that a word? I don't think so. Everyone having two shifts.
No, it's not, Kelly.
Sometimes I like to make up my own words, Clayton. With everyone having to shift in this time, you're right. A lot of, if you will open yourself up to it, a lot of creativity and new projects can emerge from a time like this. And, you know, things that you do can translate into the world differently than they did. And, you know, for people to have to figure that out, it's a journey. So yeah. I'm happy to hear that that's happening for you.
Thank you.
It's great. So what's the biggest piece of advice that you would give entrepreneurs or creative types like yourself that have a ton of skill set, they have all these areas that they want to explore? And what is the biggest piece of advice that you would give them to just setting fire and choreographing all of that?
Can I give two pieces of advice?
I guess. Yes, of course you can.
Thanks, Kelly.
Yep.
The first one I think that I always like to, like, I really, this, I will, this is the hill I will die on. I think the best way to do anything in life is to follow your fun. I think that if you work on something that isn't appealing to you because you think it's the right thing to do, or because you think it's going to get you to a place that people expect you to be, or because, oh, I want to be a dancer, but you know, if I go to school for accounting, I'll make more money and that'll be better. Anything you do that's not part of what you want to do is going to end up being a path that you don't want to be on. And I think that it's very hard sometimes to follow your fun and follow your enjoyment, because it is not great to not have a lot of money to pay bills. It's not mm-hmm. great to, you know, to always put your art out there or whatever, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, you're going to have a hard time, but there's nothing more rewarding than hitting major milestones along a path to a place where you really want to go. So number one is just follow your fun, follow the things that make you happy. And then the second thing is, you will be amazed at how far you can go if you just try going there. I think
retweet.
There are so many people, and I've worked with a lot of other writers who want to, you know, they're independent authors who, you know, I want to publish a book, but I don't know how. Or, you know, entrepreneurs who are like, I have this idea, but I don't know where to go. And it's like, have you tried doing it? You know, have you taken the steps? And no, it just seems so daunting. It is daunting, but if you take the steps, it becomes less daunting because you're moving toward it. And I think mm-hmm. that I'm constantly stunned by how far I can take projects, and not every project gets that far. A lot of things that I try just fail immediately.
Well, that's okay though. But
yeah,
but you got to start.
And that's part of the process, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we wanted to start a coffee roasting company. I don't know anything about a coffee roasting company. So I started doing the research and started doing the work and started going to seminars and trainings. Like you'd be amazed at how far your own momentum can take you if you just start walking that way.
That's so awesome. Those were two great pieces of advice. Do you have a third?
Oh God.
I'm stripping you of all of your information and knowledge. I love both of those. Are just, they're so great. I cannot say enough like how true and how, you know, it's just, you got to start and you have to do something that you love. And if you're not doing something that you love, you're not going to do it well ever.
Yeah.
Like you can fake it, but you're not going to be fulfilled and it's not going to make you happy. And so how can you do something that you love and, you know, make it work? So, and not everybody can, but you got to try.
Yeah. And sometimes doing that means cobbling together a whole bunch of things that you love to try to make it, mm-hmm. you know, make it work. And, you know, you can do that. You can do it. You can do whatever you want to do. There are so many resources, and I bet that in your life, no matter who you are, you have people who are willing to help you. You might not realize it, but people want to help you.
They 100% do. Everybody wants to be helpful. Like at the end of the day, they absolutely do. So just reach out to Clayton. He'll help.
I love helping.
He doesn't have anything helpful. Going on right now.
I got some free minutes between 3:37 and 3:39 today. So give me a call.
Hey, speaking of which, thank you so much for finding the time. No, I'm serious. For finding the time in your schedule to come be on my show.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on. This is really fun.
Of course. It's so nice to get to ask you, you know, whenever we talk, it's, you know, obviously, how are you? Fine. Great. Cool. But like to have conversations like this with your friends, like I don't get to have them all the time. So this is really cool to get to do this. So thank you.
It is cool. And I like that now it's your podcast. So you're the one who has to edit it all together.
Yeah.
I can just hang up and go take a nap.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And thank you, everybody else out there, we will be back same time, same place next week, Wednesday. Have an awesome, awesome rest of your day. Woo!